Blog Talk Radio.
What is up, fight fans? You are listening to Vincent Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Harden, and I am broadcasting, finally, live from Sacramento, California, on the September the 23rd, 2010. I have a great show for you tonight. Coming up, I will be joined by Stephen Spaniard Valentine. Yes, Spaniard is a jack-of-all-trades that has a lowdown on not only the Pacific Northwest fight scene, but the world of MMA as well. So I'm looking forward to talking to Stephen Valentine and breaking down UFC 119 in Indianapolis, Indiana. Some of the other things I want to talk about tonight: Chael Sonnen tests positive for steroids at UFC 117. Now, one of the things I want to get into that is I want to get into the ramifications of what that means, not only for the UFC and Chael Sonnen, but also for the middleweight division. You know, a lot can happen in a year in mixed martial arts. A lot can happen. So I do want to get into that a little bit later on in the show, kind of see where you guys lie on what you think this can possibly mean for Chael Sonnen and the middleweight division of the UFC. Also, I touched on it last week on the dreadful internet lossage show. Paul Semtex Daily signs with Strikeforce. I do want to get into that. And one of the questions that arises to me with Paul Daly signing with Strikeforce is, how quickly can he make an impact? I mean, this is a top 10 welterweight contender. How quickly can Paul Semtex Daly make an impact in the Strikeforce middleweight division? Also coming up, WEC World Extreme Cage Fighting announces Uriah Faber versus Takeya Mizugaki at the Palms in Las Vegas, November 11th. You know, questions there is, how will Faber do as a bantamweight? I mean, it's still Uriah Faber. Uriah Faber is always going to be Uriah Faber. But also, you know, what does it mean for the WEC bantamweight division now that Uriah Faber is cutting down in weight? You know, what are some of the matchups that you fight fans actually want to see now? Now that Uriah Faber is in the bantamweight division, do you want to see Faber Torres, Faber Dominic Cruz? I mean, there's a lot of ways. You know, maybe some of you are sick and twisted and want to see Benavidez Faber, two teammates, two friends go at it. You know, where will it stop if Joseph Benavidez or Uriah Faber wins the bantamweight title? Would they challenge each other? I mean, so there's a lot of different avenues we can get into tonight, kind of talking about Uriah Faber moving down to the WEC bantamweight division. And one of the questions I have of that is, along the lines of that is, with Uriah going down to the bantamweight division, what does that say about WEC featherweight champion Jose Aldo? I know he's got a big fight coming up in Bloomfield, Colorado, but what does that mean if Uriah Faber, who has been the king of the WEC featherweight division for so many years, actually moves down instead of rematching Jose Aldo? Also, Bellator Fighting Championship signs undefeated lightweight Michael Chandler. Is anyone watching Bellator? I am. I know several people that are, you know, but I'm just wondering, you know, they don't really release the cable numbers for Bellator Fighting Championships. You know, they are probably fighting, just got done fighting right now. But doing a lot of show prep tonight, and I haven't really had a chance to sit and watch any of the fights. I know Brian the Beast Baker beat Jeremy Horn. So, questions are, is anyone watching Bellator? Are you still excited by the weekly tournaments and the weekly shows? And also, how quickly can Michael Chandler challenge for the Bellator lightweight championship? I mean, right now, we got Pat Curran waiting to challenge Eddie Alvarez but also the super fight coming up in a few months is Eddie Alvarez and Roger El Matador Huerta. So a lot of interesting matchups kind of forming in Bellator right now. I know tonight they were going to crown their heavyweight champion, and I'm not quite sure who actually has won that fight. I haven't watched yet. I recorded it, and I'll get into that. Maybe I'll look it up a little bit, but I also want to talk about that a little bit in the show. Coming up this weekend, big weekend of football. Dallas Cowboys, Houston Texans, Monday night Packers at Chicago, Atlanta Falcons at the New Orleans Saints, Steelers at the Bucks, Lions at the Vikings, Jets at the Dolphins, Tennessee at the New York Football Giants, Niners at the Chiefs, Cincinnati Bengals take on Carolina Panthers, the Browns in Baltimore against the Ravens, the Bills against the Patriots in Foxborough, the Philadelphia Eagles with starting quarterback Michael Vick against the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Colts at the Broncos, Chargers at the Seahawks, Skins at the Lambs, and the Raiders at the Arizona Cardinals. I do want to break down some of those fights a little later on in the show. Also, number 24, Oregon State Beavers travel to Boise, Idaho to step foot on the famed blue turf and challenge the number 3 ranked Boise State Broncos. You know, I am a huge college football fan, so I'm always recording one of the games. I try to pick the game of the week. I record it, sit down late at night, and watch it. But I want to know where some of you guys kind of lay on the whole Boise State thing. I mean, really, this is technically Boise State's only real test coming up this season. And if Boise State gets past Oregon State, you know, are you okay with Boise State running the table and being in the national championship picture, or do you want to see Boise State schedule harder teams? They're kind of a slave to their own schedule because of the conference they play in. But I just kind of want to get some of your guys' thoughts on what you feel about Boise State and how so far your teams are doing this this early week 3 in the college football season. I got a lot I want to talk about. First off, I want to thank the usual suspects, AJ Down Under, Bob in Toronto, Sports Betting Man, Garbage Points, Joe and all the boys at the Sacramento Bee, where life's captured daily, the Brothers Arena, my friends, my family, my gym, Muay Lao, all the readers of Vincent Magazine, Curtis the Child, White Lightning Crabtree. I know there's a lot of you guys that I'm forgetting, but I do want to send my sincerest thanks for all your guys' support. You guys have been supporting me since day one. So, again, I want to thank all the usual suspects, friends, and family. Real quick scoreboard here on Vincent Radio. The A's blank the Rangers 5-0 at home. The Blue Jays beat the Mariners 1-0. Ichiro hits his 200th hit. Jose Bautista hits his 50th home run as the Jays beat the Mariners 1-0. The Dodgers get by the Padres 3-1. The Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 10-6. The Royals double up on the Indians 4-2. The Cardinals beat the Pirates 9-2. Albert Pujols hits his 40th and 41st home runs. The Tampa Bay Rays beat the Yankees 10-3. The Rays rough up CC Sabathia, and they split the series with the Yankees. The Astros fall to the Nationals 7-2. And the San Francisco Gigantes just trounce the Chicago Cubs. Shocking. Jose Uribe homers twice in an inning to lift the Giants 13-0 over the Cubs. And the Brewers beat the Marlins 8-3 in Milwaukee as Corey Hart's 30th home run keys the Brewers. So that's kind of set the table for you. If you know what you want to talk about, start dialing now. The numbers, if you heard, 347-857-1959. You can join the online chat, but beware, it is shark-infested water, so enter at your own risk. If you want, you can drop me an email at vincentradio@gmail.com. Also, the show is on iTunes. You can listen to it whenever and wherever you want. Just go to iTunes and search Vincent Radio, and you will see Vincent Radio hosted by Anthony Harden Sr. And, of course, you can become a fan of the show page on Facebook at Vincent Radio, hosted by Anthony Harden Sr. Become my friend on Facebook. Friend me, Anthony Harden. You know, it's this silly little thing all the kids seem to be doing. Looking forward to, in a few minutes, talking to, again, journalist Stephen Spanier Valentine. I met him up in Portland at the FCFF Rumble at the Roseland 51. Good dude. The guy gets around. Former fighter. He gets around. He is very well connected. Kind of has a pulse on what is going on, not only in the Pacific Northwest, but like I said, in MMA as a whole. So we will be talking a little UFC 119 this weekend live from Indianapolis, Indiana. I want to get his thoughts on who he thinks some of the sleepers are going to be this weekend, some of the fights he is looking forward to. I want to bounce a few things off of Spaniard and catch up with him and see how everything is going. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to get too deep into this because I'm waiting for Spaniard to call in. But there are several key matchups at UFC 119 that could really have a bearing on what their respective divisions can do. I, you know, although I'm excited about the whole Krokop Frank Muir fight, I think it has some potential. I still, you know, as much as I respect the hell out of Mirko Krokop, there is just something missing with Mirko Krokop, and I just don't know what it is. I can't quite put my finger on it, what he is missing, what he is not doing. It's really, really baffling. It is really baffling why it is such a fight for him to throw those kicks and throw his hands. So that's definitely one thing I do want to get into. And, you know, and if he does throw his hands and his kicks, how long do you see Frank Muir lasting? You know, is this something that could end over in very, very quickly? You know what I mean? So we'll get into that with Spaniard, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, I'm looking forward to this card. I've talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people are saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to buy this card. I'm not real excited about it. I think it's going to be a pretty good card, especially with the Antonio Ruggiero, Nogueira, Ryan Bader fight. That could have some serious implications on the UFC lightweight division. You know, some of these fights, they are going to kind of shape how the UFC ends their year. You got Matt Serra, Chris Lytle, the rematch. Sean the Muscle Shark Shirk versus Evan the Kid Dunham. Evan Dunham is on a meteoric rise right now to the UFC lightweight division. You know, Jeremy Little, Heathen Stevens, and Melvin Gallar, that could possibly be the fight of the night because, you know, both guys are coming in with bad intentions in their mind and really, really looking to hurt and to punish one another. So there's definitely a lot of things that I do want to get into. And maybe fight fans have picked up or not, but I'm incorporating a little more sports into the show. I do want to talk college football. You know, I'm a sports nerd. I do want to talk MLB playoff baseball. Shit, I'll talk MLB baseball, period. I want to talk NBA basketball when the season starts up. I know preseason hockey, my San Jose Sharks got smoked by the Anaheim Mighty Ducks last night. You know, so there are different sports I'm trying to incorporate into the show. I'm working with some organizations and some teams, trying to get on different players for interviews. Still a work in progress. You know, we'll see where that leads. But, you know, it's I'm trying to bring just more than fights to the show. I mean, although I can talk fights for hours and I enjoy talking fights for hours, I definitely want to talk some football, some baseball, some college football. Also, a little later on tonight, we've had a Paul Williams sighting. Got a little bit of info on what may lay ahead for Paul Williams. Joining me right now is a journalist, Pacific Northwest fight scene, good guy. Guy I met in Portland a couple months ago, Steven the Spaniard Valentine. Steve, what's going on, man?
Good, man. Just enjoying some of this Northwest rain.
You know, I talked a little bit. I ran into you. I met you up in Portland at the FCFF. I believe it was the Rumble at the Roseland 51 card. You know, real quickly, you know, it kind of news dropping that Chael Sonnen tested positive, the California State Athletic Commission, you know, bringing up news that Chael Sonnen tested positive for steroids prior to his fight with Anderson Silva at UFC 117. What is the feeling, you know, being up in the Pacific Northwest, what is the feeling right now? What are people saying now that this news has come out?
It's kind of mixed emotions. Depends on I've heard mixed emotions from the different gyms I've gone to. You know, there's everybody behind as the story kind of keeps coming out. You know, now it's came out that he told the commission beforehand. Now there's a lot of people saying, okay, well, why did they let him fight? Why was this? There's other things saying, okay, you know, there's other people who are just like, you know, it's too bad. It was one of his best performances. And then there are just other people who are just downright shocked and bummed and, you know, out there on the limb. So, yeah, I think there's all different people feeling different things.
What does it say? I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. I'm looking at this and I'm going, this guy took Anderson Silva to the brink, okay, and taking nothing away at what he did exactly what he said he was going to do in that fight, short of winning the title. This has got to really make people scratch their heads and think, could this guy have done this if he wasn't, you know, using PEDs? I myself want to think that it doesn't matter what was in his system. He was going to do this anyways. I am a fan of Chael Sonnen. I think he would have brought the fight to Anderson Silva no matter what. But, I mean, this definitely has to kind of place like a black mark, you know, on what he did at UFC 117.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, it's really kind of a situation where, I mean, it was his best performance, and now here we are, you know, the two positive tests, and now it's, okay, he's going to appeal it, and we're going to definitely see how the story unfolds. But still, I mean, it's even so. I mean, it tarnishes his thing. I mean, now, like you're saying, could he have done that either way? I mean, yeah, he's had some pretty good performances in the cage and done some pretty good, you know, where he's taking guys down, you know, Nate Marquardt other times where he's really performed well and didn't test positive there. So, you know, yeah, he has it in him. Unfortunately, yeah, this does, you know, put a mark, and I guess now it's kind of to see how this plays out, how the appeal plays out, you know, what the specifics were of, you know, what he said to the commission, what was, you know, the reason, all this and that. I think, you know, a lot more is to come.
You know, kind of staying on the Pacific Northwest kind of feel, recently Josh Barnett signed with Strikeforce. What type of impact is Josh Barnett going to have in the Strikeforce heavyweight division?
He's a mean big boy. He's definitely going to change some things. His catch wrestling, he's strong. You know, hopefully he can continue to not test positive. You know, that's something that I would hope for.
Yeah, exactly.
I like, you know what I mean? I like watching the guy and I like his fighting style. So, I really hope that he could stay off the bad end of the positive test and get out some good performances, because I think he could be a champion at some point.
You know, I always bring this up. I have my circle of friends, and I brought this up a few times on the show. Who is Alistair Overeem? I mean, do we really know? I mean, I'm a fight guy, you know what I mean? So I've been watching him fight for years, but there's a lot of new fans, as I use a little quotation marks on my fingers, a lot of new fans to MMA. and they have not seen him fight, and they don't know who this guy is. I mean, are we ever going to see this guy fight and defend his Strikeforce Heavyweight Championship on a regular basis, or is he just going to continue to be that enigma that he has been so far?
That's a good question. I was really confused at that whole thing of what they were doing, why it wasn't Fedor and him, I don't understand. You know, I've been following him since the Pride days, and so, you know, especially seeing the new improved Alistair, how big he was and how good he was doing. I mean, I was ready to see that fight with him and Fedor, and I really don't know. You know, all I can hope is for that they continue to get him out there and get him fighting. I mean, because obviously that's what an organization needs to do, is get their fighters fighting. I really don't know. I mean, Alistair was a guy really who came out in Pride and was supposed to do really well and then kind of didn't, and then went back to the drawing board. And then, you know, now here we see a new and improved Alistair who's 10 times bigger than what he was, put on a lot of weight and got a lot bigger. And, you know, now he's back and doing bigger things. I mean, it's kind of almost like a Vitor Belfort story, you know, where he was supposed to do big things and then he didn't, and then he went back to the drawing board and now he's back again. And, you know, it's the same thing as Vitor really is. The guy has a lot of potential. So, you know, I hope they really get him out there and get him working.
It's got to be a detriment when, you know, especially American Fight fans, and I've always stood by the reason why boxing in the States has taken a dip. I grew up in a boxing family. It was because there was no heavyweights we could get behind, you know. And I've always said that if people can't pronounce your name, they're not as inclined to root for you. You get what I'm saying? So
right.
It's got to be a detriment for Strikeforce to have a heavyweight champion that doesn't defend his belt. You know what I mean? And no one really knows who he is. I think if they can get him in Strikeforce back fighting on a regular basis, it can only help the Strikeforce cause, if you will.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the other part about a lot of people don't understand. I mean, Fedor came with the M1 global brand, and so that,
yeah,
you know, that whole deal of Strikeforce getting him, it was, they also got M1 global, and so it's,
yeah,
you know, Fedor's fighting is all dependent upon what M1 global does, and so it's not, it's almost as if it's a separate entity in the organization, and it's just different. You know, it's almost not like the best fighting the best. It's like Fedor, and then there's the best in Strikeforce, and so it's almost disappointing. Because, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, what happened, now everybody's going, oh, he got submitted, oh my gosh, and, you know, it's just kind of like, well, but that's MMA, you know, people lose, and that's what's supposed to happen. And so now,
yeah,
a lot of people in MMA who weren't MMA fans originally are like, oh my gosh, you mean he lost? You know, it's like, well, yeah, that's what's supposed to happen. You know, good guys lose, and they come back, and they get better. So, you know, now we'll see what happens.
You know, I do want to talk about a little UFC 119 from the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana. You know, the main card. I'm really intrigued by the Evan Dunham Sean Sherk fight. I know I spoke with you last week. You had a chance to interview Evan Dunham. Maybe I'm just way over the top of this, but I mean, does Sean Sherk really stand a chance against Evan Dunham in this fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think, hell, I mean, Sean Sherk stands a chance against anybody. That guy brings it, you know, all three rounds. He's always in shape. Sean Sherk he's a tough guy. And both, you know, Evan and Sean both had tough fights against Tyson. And so, but, I mean, I'm a little biased on the Evan thing. I know him pretty, pretty well. The thing that I think is, Evan's jiu-jitsu is way underrated, and a lot of people don't even see that. His technique is just sound. He's really, really good, and so when he gets hurt in anything, that's where he goes back to. And, you know, he's really good at wrestling. He's really good at scrapping. He can take a punch, but his jiu-jitsu puts people away when they're not expecting it. You know, I mean, Efron, he really didn't expect that. And so, you know, I think that's where Sean's going to be in trouble is, you know, he's going to bring the fight to Evan, but Evan's going to bring it right back to him and have a chance to look to submit him over and over and over again. And, you know, that's, I think, the difference. And I think Evan's going to probably, I'm hoping that Evan will finish this probably in the third, but, I mean, you never know. With those two guys, I mean, they're both going to bring it. So, I mean, I do think Sean has a chance, but I don't see, you know, Evan not walking away with this.
you know, you would think, you know, especially with Evan's submission prowess, you would think Shirk is eventually going to make a mistake and play right into Dunham's game. You know what I mean? So I like Evan Dunham. I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, you know what I mean? But when he replaced, you know, David Barron, he kind of came out of nowhere, you know, and he's on this roll right now. And I don't put a whole lot of stock into him beating Efrain Escudero because I was never really sold on that guy, you know, but right. I was really sold on Tyson Griffin. And when he beat Tyson Griffin, I was like, huh, okay, this kid, you know, this kid, he's legit. He's for real. I mean, he, you know, battled it out with a legitimate, you know, UFC lightweight. So I'm on the Evan Dunham bandwagon. I have been for some time, but he really opened my eyes to what he could do in the UFC lightweight division. I've always really struggled to get behind Shirk because he's so one-dimensional. He's really boring to watch. I've just always gone back and forth. I still respect what he does. Hey, he's in there. He's banging it out. You know what I mean? But I just always been a real struggle for me personally to get behind Sean Shirk. The rematch between Matt Serra and Chris Lights Out Lytle, does anyone even remember that these guys fought? I mean, I was talking to a buddy, and he was excited for this, and I was like, you know, this is a rematch, and he thought I was joking. I mean, do people remember that these guys actually fought some time back?
No, some people don't, and that Chris Lytle is like he's like the bonus king. That guy's won more bonuses than anybody.
Yeah.
That fight's great. I can't wait. I mean, I've always been a Chris Lytle fan ever since back in the day, and then seeing him at the WC, he fought my old coach, JT Taylor. That guy just, he always comes, and he has such good, crisp, clean boxing. It's good to see a guy like that who brings that to the table. You know, not too many people have been able to encompass that type of boxing. That high level of clean, crisp boxing like him, and he's just real good at it. And that's one of those types of guys, I think, where, you know, a lot of boxers have respect because they see him, and he's, you know, he's got it. And so, I mean, you know, and against a guy like Sarah, I mean, this is great. It's going to build up for another great fight on the card.
You know, the Antonio Ruggiero Nogueira Ryan Bader fight, I like the twist that, you know, Bader was coached by Big Nog on The Ultimate Fighter. I always kind of look and search for these little, you know, tidbits and these little twists here and there. I like Bader in this fight, man. I think he's a legit light heavyweight. And, you know, I've seen Lil Nog fight the last Pride fight in Las Vegas, when they had the last Pride fight in the United States in Las Vegas. I think it was Pride 33. Saw Lil Nog get dropped by Sokaju. Never thought I would see that, you know.
Right.
Although Lil Nog has, you know, these world-class hands, Bader's, he's just one of these wrestlers that it didn't take him very long to develop punching power and really how to use his hands, kind of like a Cain Velasquez. Where are you kind of lying on this light heavyweight tilt?
It's kind of hard. I like the Nogueira brothers and Vanderlei, but in this fight, I really think Bader's the sleeper. I think I think his hands and ability to really push the pace are really going to change this fight. Bader really goes at it and really has a different pace, you know, and I think he's really going to be able to get Nog in a different place, you know, and I think a couple of those heavy hands are going to land, and I think that's going to be the end of the night. I think Bader's the pick for this one. I just like him. I always like getting behind the guy, you know, and if you meet him, he's such a good guy. He's really, you know, he's sound mind. He's a nice guy in person. He trains hard. He always brings it, comes to fight, and you know, and how could you not like a guy like that, you know? Yeah, I'm definitely a Bader fan.
You know, are we going to see the Crow Cop Trent Muir fight? I don't understand who I'm watching anymore. You know what I mean? I've always stood behind the fact that I personally thought that Mirko Crow Cop should have dropped to light heavyweight. I just thought that the way he's built, you know, he would be a much more exciting, more successful fighter in the light heavyweight division of the UFC. This can go either way. I mean, it just seems like lately it is a struggle, not only for Krokop, but his corner and fans to see Krokop let his hands go and really see the strikes. On the flip side, Frank Muir will take chances, you know. I don't really know. I don't have a pick in this fight. I mean, usually I do. I'm old school pride, so I want to roll with Krokop for what he's done in the past. But, I mean, that Krokop in the past, he's dead, right? I mean, are we ever going to see Mirko Krokop like we saw him in the Pride days?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really one of those kinds of guys. I don't think that, because I really believe in evolving, and I believe that every year and every day the sport's evolving to a better, bigger place. And so I don't really think that the fighters of old would be the fighters of today. I think that Krokop should get in there and be the fight, you know, a new fighter, a better fighter of that night. Because, I mean, he's got a new Frank Muir to face. And it's not the Frank Muir of back in the day. It wasn't, you know, this is a brand new Frank Muir that's going to be there that night. And this guy, you know, he's shown up. He's got some good hands. He's really trained and been a different Frank Muir. And so, you know, Frank's going to bring it. I don't see Frank really getting in there and trying to stay around and trade too long with Mirko. I really see Frank getting in there and getting Mirko to trade enough to get him to the ground and submit him. You know, I don't really see it otherwise. You know, I mean, then again, you know, you've seen, you know, Muir come out and be, you know, get some really good boxing and, you know, get in and under and in and out. So, I mean, who knows, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. I like the evolution of Frank Muir. I think he got a little kind of crazy, a little single white female on Brock Lesnar for a little bit, kind of made me a little uncomfortable.
Right.
But, you know, it was kind of odd, the whole situation with him and Brock. I was impressed with what he did against Chet Congo. You know, Big Nog, I would have never saw that coming. I would have never saw it coming. And that's when he caught Big Nog, that's what makes me kind of think in the back of my head that, you know, he'd said as much as it's kind of that UFC versus Pride. And I kind of fall on the lines of, like, you know what, maybe in the back of Frank's mind, he's thinking, you know what, I caught Big Nog, I can catch Krokop, and I can be the guy that laid down, you know, the giants of Pride, the giants of MMA, the legends, you know, albeit, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. I just, you know, it's funny. I never thought I would see a Frank Muir, you know, Mirko Krokop fight and kind of be excited for it, but I am. You know, I mean, I just,
right.
I'm looking for this card. I've heard a lot of people kind of bash this card, and I think this is, this is a legit card.
Well, and it is, and I think, you know, there's also things, I mean, I've really been kind of a fan of talking about, I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, Frank has definitely got to be going into this strong, not only because he's the, you know, could be the Pride Killer, but, I mean, he's also going to be the bigger opponent. And so, you know, that's, you know, he's going to be the bigger guy going into this. And, I mean, it's, you know, me and Randy talked about this in the past about, you know, the UFC possibly creating a cruiser division or something for these guys because of, you know, these guys like Brock and Shane and guys that are coming out that are just super huge. And it's like, you know, those guys are never going to get down to this weight, but they're just so much bigger than guys like, you know, Krokop and Frank Muir. You know, at some point there might even be a cruiser division, so who knows. But Frank's definitely got to come into this way, you know, on two notes. Yeah, Pride, I could be the Pride Killer, and I'm the big guy in this fight.
Yeah. You know, real quickly, Mark Hunt. I never thought I would see the day that Mark Hunt would be in the UFC. How long, not that I'm advocating betting at all, but if you were a betting man, how long does Mark Hunt last in the UFC?
I'd give him two fights unless he does well in both of them. I mean, I'm not, you know, trying to even bash him.
I mean, unless he does well in
both of them. I mean, I don't see that. I mean, unless they have some sort of a other obligation to be giving him, I just don't see it. I really don't. The guy, yeah, I just don't see it. He's got to win, and he's got to get a win, because a guy like that, no matter what, even though he's lost the top competition, I mean, you know, he's lost to Barnett, he's lost to Ferry, he's lost to Alistair, he's lost to Melvin, he's lost to Gregor. All those guys that he's lost to, he's still lost, and he's lost way in a row. And so it's like, you know, hey, you got to kind of get some wins back, and you got to, you know, you got to do something. I mean, any normal person that would lose like that would have to get some wins back. So, I mean, yeah. He's got to win, he's got to win decisively.
Could you have gotten behind a Mark Hunt, James Toney fight?
Only if we're trying to sell WWF type dreams. I'm trying to hope our sport doesn't go that route. I really am hoping that we're not.
Yeah, I'm hoping and praying that we don't ever see James Toney back in the UFC. I think he did what he thought he could do, and Dana got what he got from it. And I'm more than willing to move on from this, because I wasn't really for it. Like I said, I come from a boxing family. I respect and get what boxers do and have done, but he was way out of his element, and it was almost degrading to me. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, I'm going to go in there and kind of make a mockery out of this and get paid a shitload of money, and I'm going to laugh all the way back to my limo and my suite and, you know, screw it. That's kind of what I took from it, you know?
No, exactly, and that's I did too, and I think a lot of other boxers felt that way too, who, you know, at some point respectfully respect the sport, you know, but I mean, unfortunately, any good boxer is not going to be, you know, his coach is not going to be letting him go off and do MMA. I mean, there's no way. He's making too much money in boxing, and so until that kind of changes in the sport, kind of coexists that way, we're not going to see as many of those good boxers going over. You know, this was a whole big joke, really. I mean, it was unfortunate that he had to take it so far and being such a tough guy about it, but at least afterwards, you know, I mean, he got to get a little spanking on the way out, so that's what happens, and that's why a lot of these other boxers will say it too, you know. I mean, that's what happens. He got his ass kicked. So, I mean, I hope more of it happens, because I really don't like it when those guys – I've come from boxing, too. I was an amateur boxer before I got into the sport, so I love boxing to death. I hate it when boxers talk bad about the sport, because it's like, man, this is the – I mean, you're science, but this is also the evolution of science. We have a ton of sciences built into one, you know. So it sucks for me, too. So I hope at one point we can all just get along.
Let me ask you real quickly, and I'll let you go. Jeremy Little, Heathen Stevens, Melvin Gillard, does this have any implications at all? I mean, any way you twist this, I mean, or is this just two lightweights that you know are going to come in there, throw bombs at each other, and try and hurt each other and try and hit each other with bad intentions? I mean, does this have any implications at all on the UFC lightweight division? Melvin Gillard never really seemed to be able to get over the hump. Little Heathen, 17-5 right now, you know, won two in a row before they lost. He lost two in a row, you know, Joe Lozano and Gleison Tebow. Is this just for fireworks, or does this actually mean something in the lightweight division?
I think either way, one of them should definitely move up, but I think there's too many top competitors in that division. I think it's a great fight. Stylistically, it's an awesome fight for people to watch. That more so than a contentionship or anything like it in the division. There's too many tough top guys in that division. Those guys just match up so well stylistically that it's got to be a really, really good fight. I mean, those guys are going to go to war, and that's going to be a really good fight to watch. However, if one of those guys does a great fight and wins, should they be boosted up and everything's going to change? No, I don't think so. I think both of those guys still have a couple fights to win and win decisively over top competition to get themselves up and put in there. There's just too many tough guys.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I just want to throw that out there. I just thought, you know, I like the way what they're doing, putting some fireworks on this, but I just didn't really see any implications. But you know, I got to ask, because maybe you see something and maybe you hear something differently than what I do. Steven, I want to thank you very, very much for coming on and joining me, man. I want to have you back on. I've been playing catch up for a little bit, trying to get a hold of you, man. I've had all these catastrophes happen to me and shit. But, again, thank you very, very much for coming on. For those of you that want to check you out, follow you, you know, see what you're doing, where can people find you?
NorthwestFightScene.com, always, always NorthwestFightScene.com. They can check out my Facebook or NorthwestFightScene.com, but you can usually catch me on both, so.
Right on. Well, Spaniard, I want to thank you very, very much for coming on, and I'll love to catch back up and do it again.
For sure, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, bro.
All right. Take it easy, bro.
Talk soon.
Steven, the Spaniard Valentine, you know, he has some good points. He has some very, very good points, and that's why I've been trying to chase him down. Like I said, I ran into him in Portland, and just a good dude. Really, he's from the Pacific Northwest. He has, it sounds cheesy, but I mean it when I say it. He has a pulse on the Pacific Northwest fight scene and can kind of bring different views and aspects to the show. So I've been chasing him down, man. It seems like for the past few weeks, we make plans, something happens. You know, last week I lost all internet connection on the show, so it was very, very good to get caught up with Spaniard and kind of wrap a little bit and talk a little UFC 119 live from the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana. You know, I brought this up, and I want to get in this real quick. Again, you were listening to Vincent Radio, hosted by Anthony Harden. You know what you want to talk about? Numbers to be heard, 347-857-1959. You can join the online chat, where it is, Shark Infested Waters. So enter at your own risk. If you want, you can drop me an email at vincentradio@gmail.com. The show was on iTunes. You can listen to it whenever you want. Just go to the iTunes and search Vincent Radio, hosted by Anthony Harden Sr. And, of course, you can become a fan of the show page on Facebook at Vincent Radio, hosted by AnthonyHarden.com. And if you want to check out any of Stephen Valentine's writings, you can go to PacificNorthwestFightScene.com, or you can go to Facebook and look up Stephen Spaniard Valentine. But there is a Paul Williams sighting. Middleweight champ Sergio Martinez and Paul Williams will meet in a rematch of one of 2009's most exciting fights on November 20th at the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey. This is what the promoters told ESPN.com on Monday. The rematch, one of the most significant fights of the year, will be televised on HBO's World Championship Boxing. Now, Dan Goosen says, hey, it's nice to get it completed. It's not a matter of whose fault it is the fight took so long to make. It's a matter that you have two of the most feared fighters in the world facing each other. It doesn't get made overnight. There's a lot more to it. That's what took time. Now, said Lou DiBella, this is Sergio Martinez's promoter. Martinez is not afraid of anybody, and we did that deal. And we did the deal that HBO wanted to do. My take on the fight, it's the best fucking fight the rest of the year, period. Now, that's Lou DiBella. It's the best fight for fight fans, and they don't have to fork over $60 to watch it on pay-per-view, which I think is a huge, huge bonus. That's only going to whet the appetite of boxing fans. The fact that you can see, again, 2009's fight of the year, and you can watch the rematch for free on HBO. It's going to be at 157, and DeBell said, hey, we didn't have a choice. Williams wanted to catch weight. There was an issue on the weight, and we have to go to 157. So, you know, I'm looking forward to this because this was a great fight. This was a great fight back in 2009. And when more details come out, we'll, of course, maybe I'll have Spaniard on. We can break down this fight and we can talk a little bit more about it. But the fact that they're going to have it for free on HBO, if you don't have HBO, you may want to get HBO just to watch this fight because this is going to be a sick fight. This is going to be arguably, like Lou DiBella said, the fight of the year. This will be the fight of the year. I mean, I can't think of a lot of fights that will even come close. I like, and I kind of talked about this last week, and I want to touch on this real quick. Showtime has put together a single elimination tournament, two semifinal bouts starting December 11th. Showtime Sports officially announced today a series of high-profile fights amongst four of the world's elite fighters in the exciting and deep bantamweight division. The two-round single elimination tournament to determine the best fighter, 118 pounds, will begin with two semifinal bouts on Saturday, December 11th, live on Showtime from León, Mexico. Now, the four fighters, unbeaten International Boxing Federation, IBF, 118-pound champion Yanni Ocolombiano Perez, undefeated world-ranked rising star Adrian Mares, former IBF bantamweight champion Joseph King Kong Igbeko, and two-division world champion Vic Raging Bull Darchinian. Now, each bout will be scheduled for 12 rounds. The winners of each semifinal will clash in the final in 2011, with the losers competing in a consolation fight. Now, I think this is great. Now, the opening rounds are going to be Yanni Perez against Joseph King Kong Igbeko and Adam Mares versus Vic Darchinian. And what's interesting about this is Yanni Perez actually outpointed then-defending champion Joseph King Kong Igbeko to actually win the IBF belt back in October 2009. And then he retained that belt with a majority draw over Adam Mares in May. Now, Igbeko retained his IBF belt in the unanimous decision over Vic Darchinian July 7th, 2009. So all these guys have come and crossed paths with one another in some way, shape, or form. So this is, you know, as much as I was down with the World Boxing Classic Super 6 Middleweight Championship, as much as I was down for that, it is slowly falling apart, and it's not looking good. And it's too bad. It is too bad because it's just too many fights, too many fighters equals too many chances for injuries. And now, I mean, they're dropping like flies, especially with Carl Frosch having to drop out. So, you know, I like the fact that it's four fighters, two fights, and then you had your champion crowned. You know, I just like that. It's short, it's sweet. It's not going to drag on. I mean, as much as I'm down with the WBC World Boxing Super 6 Championship, it just has drug on for far too long. And I just think that it's more than anything, it is hurting the sports rather than helping it. You know, we talked a little bit about UFC middleweight contender Chael Sonnen testing positive and being suspended by the California State Athletic Commission. The California State Athletic Commission on Wednesday released an official statement on the positive drug test result for Chael Sonnen, who failed the test in conjunction with his challenge to UFC middleweight champion Anderson Silva August 7th at UFC 117 in Oakland. Now, the statement does not address a report from Sports Illustrated saying that Sonnen had revealed his use of PEDs, but this is a statement in full from the CSAC. The California State Athletic Commission has suspended the license of mixed martial arts fighter Chael Sonnen after Sonnen tested positive for steroids, a banned substance. A sample from Sonnen's August 6th drug test, mind you, he fought on the 7th. A sample from Sonnen's August 6th drug test came back with a high TE testosterone to estrogen level, which is indicative of anabolic steroid use. CSAC learned of the results September 2nd and ordered a second test, which also came back positive for steroid use. The CSAC, California State Athletic Commission, received test results from the second sample on September 14th and suspended Sonnen 2 days later. He is suspended for 1 year. Now, Sonnen has 30 days to appeal the decision. The CSAC, you know, the use of anabolic steroids and other banned substances are not tolerated by the commission, said CSAC Executive Officer George Dodd. Anabolic agents put the health and safety of both the user and his opponent at risk. Now, Sonnen's test was observed in the presence of a CSAC representative, and the sample was sent to the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, on August 6, 2010, for processing. I mean, this, you know, not to sound dramatic, but this really sends waves, I guess you could say shockwaves, through the mixed martial arts community and through the UFC middleweight division, mainly because Chael Sonnen had been so outspoken and has basically called out everyone and their mother under the sun and pointed fingers and really played the hero in the white hat role. And now all that has totally changed. You know, maybe Anderson Silva does speak English and doesn't want to talk to the media. Maybe George St. Pierre does sound like a French version of Minnie Mouse. But the one thing you cannot say about Anderson Silva or Machida or Shogun or GSP, as much as Chael Sonnen has talked about all of these fighters, one thing that they're not or haven't been proved to be is a cheater who's used performance-enhancing drugs, PEDs. And I just think that it's really too bad that it came down like that because Chael Sonnen was just such a breath of fresh air. I respect the fact that he called guys out and put people on the hot seat. I like that. I enjoyed that boxing style of self-promotion, really, really calling people out and bringing to people. But, damn, I mean, it's not looking good right now. And like I said, a lot can happen in a year. I mean, in a year, Anderson Silva could be retired. He could be, you know, on a two-fight losing streak. He could have lost to Vitor. He could have lost to anyone, to Vanderlei. I mean, really, I mean, let's just look at it from all different angles. Anything could happen in that year. So, you know, it's just sad that it's actually come down to this. It's really too bad. I understand where Dana White's coming from, saying, hey, you know, we all make mistakes, we're all human, but you got to know he's pissed. You got to know he's pissed. He really could have sold that instant rematch and made quite a bit of coin off of that Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen rematch, but obviously that's not going to happen now. That is definitely not going to happen now. And it's too bad. It really is too bad. What is not too bad is Nebraska, University of Nebraska's college football team has earned their black shirts. Coach Bo Pelini said he handed out 12 black shirt practice jerseys Thursday to recognize the key players on his defense. The black jerseys are a Nebraska tradition that has come to symbolize defensive excellence. Now, these went away for quite some time. Previously, Pelini waited until October or even November to hand out the black jerseys because he believes it's an honor players have to earn. Now, he said this week that he felt the right time to do it was right now this year. Nebraska has allowed an average of 16 points this year and ranks 24th nationally in scoring defense. The black shirts have also grabbed 8 interceptions and ranked 2nd nationally. The number 6 Cornhuskers are preparing for a final tune-up against the vaunted South Dakota State football team on Saturday before starting Big 12 play. Now, I want to switch gears. I want to kind of wrap up a little bit early, talking a little football. Dallas to Houston. Matt Schaub is coming off a 497-yard passing game against a Washington team that beat Dallas. If the Cowboys do implode, the aftershocks will be felt around the world. The Atlanta Falcons at the New Orleans Saints. The New Orleans plays on a short week after traveling back from California where they play the 49ers. This could help the Falcons. Did you know that Falcons running back Michael Turner has a rushing touchdown in three straight games against the Saints? Atlanta's Tony Gonzalez has at least five receptions on five consecutive games against the Saints. The Pittsburgh Steelers at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Steelers are making a bid to go 4-0 without Ben Roethlisberger, which a lot of people were questioning if they could even win a game without Ben Roethlisberger and could use their third quarterback in three games without him. The Buccaneers are finding ways to win, but they haven't seen a defense like this. The Steelers are 9-0 when James Harrison has two-plus sacks in a game. Just remember that. Heinz Ward needs two touchdowns to move into second place on the franchise's all-time list. Detroit at Minnesota. Minnesota is not looking good right now. Now, could it be so bad that the Vikings would want to start Tavares Jackson? I'm just saying, could it get to a point where Brett Favre hangs him up, tucks up his pride, and the Lions, Jarvis Best, is the only rookie in NFL history to have 75-plus rushing yards, 150-plus receiving yards, and three touchdowns in one game. They did that last week against the Eagles. Detroit wide receiver Calvin Johnson has 10 receiving touchdowns in his past 12 games against division opponents. The New York Football Jets against the vaunted Miami Dolphins defense. Darrelle Revis is likely to be quarantined this week, so look for Dolphins wide receiver Brandon Marshall. The key matchup is going to be Brandon Marshall versus Antonio Cromartie. Now, I think that's going to be the key matchup of the weekend. Now, the question is, will the Dolphins use the Wildcat in hopes of changing up their offensive looks against the New York Jets defense? The Jets have won three straight road games. New York linebacker Jason Taylor, formerly of the Miami Dolphins, will face the Dolphins for the first time. He spent 12 seasons in Miami. The Dolphins are 31-12-1 all-time in home openers. So something to look forward to right there. Tennessee Titans at the New York Giants. Vince Young gets a shot at redemption after he was yanked from a loss. The Steelers last week. Hines had seven turnovers, three of which were Vince Young's. Now, Chris Johnson, you know he wants to have a 100-yard game. After last week, it was snapped against the Steelers. That's something to be watching for. That is something to be watching for. How quickly and how hard does Chris Johnson rebound after having his 100-yard game streak snapped? You are listening to Vincent Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Harden, broadcasting live from Sacramento, California, on this September the 23rd, 2010. You got something you want to talk about? The numbers, have you heard? 347-857-1959. You can join the online chat. Beware, it's shark-infested waters. Talk a little bit of that. A little bit about Chael Sonnen testing positive for the CSAC. Breaking down a little NFL football right now. We'll talk a little, preview a little UFC 119 with my man Steven Spanier Valentine from PacificNorthwestFightScene.com. Talk a little bit about Paul Daly signing with Strikeforce. Also talked a little bit about Josh Barnett signing with Strikeforce and what he could bring to the Strikeforce heavyweight division. Right now we're going down and talking a little NFL football right now. The San Francisco 49ers at the Kansas City Chiefs. The 49ers are 8-0 when Alex Smith starts and has a passer rating of at least 96. Niners tight end Vernon Davis has 5 touchdowns in his last 4 games against AFC opponents. Now, the Chiefs have not won consecutive home games since 2006-2007. Now, can the Chiefs knock off a second preseason division favorite in their second week at the new Arrowhead? I'm picking the Chiefs in that game. I like the way the Niners looked, but I'm picking the Chiefs in that game. The Cincinnati Bengals at the Carolina Panthers. Rookie quarterback Jimmy Clausen makes his first NFL start after Matt Moore was put on the injured reserve. Now the Bengals showed a little defense last week. They actually picked off Joe Flacco of the Ravens 4 times. Let's see what they do against a rookie quarterback in Jimmy Clausen. Now, Cincinnati's head coach Marvin Lewis is 17-10-1 against NFC opponents in his head coaching career. Now, Carolina running back Jonathan Stewart has rushed for 100 yards in 3 of his past 4 home games. And Panthers wide receiver Steve Smith has a touchdown catch in 6 consecutive games. Cleveland Browns at the Baltimore Ravens. How quickly will Mike Holmgren pull the plug on the Eric Mangini era? That's what I'm wondering mostly about this is, and Cleveland fans, what are you thinking about the Eric Mangini era? I read my ESPN the magazine. You know, he's let go of being so controlling. So domineering. He kind of let go of all the Belichick tendencies that he's learned over the years. Now, the Ravens have not allowed a touchdown pass this season. I think that should be intact this weekend. I would like to think that they'll keep that intact this weekend, especially the way Jake Delhomme has not been playing. And not going to play. Kind of a dead fish of the game, if you ask me. I mean, that's just my opinion. This is going to be a dead fish of a game. Cleveland running back Peyton Hillis has scored a touchdown in 2 consecutive games. Can you make it 3? Now, running quarterback Joe Flacco of the Ravens is 4-0 against the Browns in his career. And Baltimore linebacker Terrell Suggs has more sacks versus the Cleveland Browns, 11, than he does against any other opponent. Moving forward, the Buffalo Bills go into Foxborough against the New England Patriots. You know, Patriot fans, I'd like to get in your head and really figure out what it is you guys are thinking right now. I know Tom Brady has won 21 consecutive home games, but now the Bills are basically benching Trent Edwards and starting Ryan Fitzpatrick. Patriot fans, you know, it used to be an afterthought that the Patriots were going to be in a suit. Not that many years ago, the Patriots were a dynasty. Okay, they were a sports dynasty. I don't hear that anymore. I do not hear that anymore. You might hear some rumblings about that from Patriot fans, but you sure as hell don't hear that from NFL fans. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, the Patriots will win this game, especially looking at the fact that the Bills only scored 17 points the past two games. Chan Gailey if Chan Gailey makes it through this season, I will be shocked. I would be shocked. I don't wish anything bad on the guy. I'm just saying, being a Bills fan in my Paisan Arena, Mike, I'm waiting for you to call in and talk a little Bills football, but is this what you signed up for? The Patriots have beaten the Bills 13 consecutive times. That is amazing. That is a run right there. These Philadelphia Eagles, with starting quarterback Michael Vick, make their way into Jacksonville, Florida, against David Garrard in his four-interception game last week. And the Jaguars' defense is just abysmal. They've allowed an AFC high of 55 points. So you would expect Michael Vick to have a field day tomorrow, or on Sunday, pardon me. You know, it wasn't that long ago when people were touting Jack Del Rio as the coach of the future. He's an NFL linebacker for the Vikings, and he was going to bring a defensive presence to the Jaguars. And he just can't seem to get over the hump. I know the Jaguars are 12-2 at home against NFC opponents under Jack Del Rio. But I just think at this point in time, unless Michael Vick totally reverts back to the Michael Vick of old, I see Philadelphia winning this game in Jacksonville. Now, the Indianapolis Colts rolling into Mile High Stadium in Denver, Colorado. This could be the best game of the day, actually. Peyton Manning is 7-2 in his career against the Broncos, including the playoffs. Now, receiver Reggie Wayne has four touchdown catches in his last three games versus Denver. And Kyle Orton is 20-5. Quarterback of the Broncos is 20-5 as a starter at home. Broncos starting safety Brian Dawkins is making his 201st career start. Now the question is, with Champ Bailey ailing, will Peyton Manning take advantage of that defensive backfield? And is this going to be another Manning-esque game where he goes for 300 yards and three touchdowns? Would love to hear from you Bronco fans about what you think you guys can do against Peyton Manning. The San Diego Superchargers at the Seattle Seahawks. The Chargers have won 5 in a row against NFC opponents. And I have a feeling they will make it 6. San Diego is 11-1 when Antonio Gates has two or more receiving touchdowns in a game. That's pretty impressive. Since 2005, Seahawks quarterback Matt Hasselbeck is 28-10 at home. Seattle running back Justin Forsett has a 5.5 yard per carry average in his career. I just don't see the Chargers stumbled. To say they stumbled against the Chiefs Monday night opener is putting it nicely. I just don't see the Seahawks having enough ammunition to really roll with the San Diego Chargers. Washington Redskins at the St. Louis Rams. Redskins running back Clinton Portis has four touchdowns in his past three games against the Rams. Washington linebacker Brian Orakpo has 7.5 sacks in 8 career road games. Rams running back Steven Jackson has 482 yards from scrimmage in his last 3 games versus the Redskins. Now this is going to be a question of, can Donovan McNabb repeat what he did last week? And also, on the other side, will the St. Louis Rams repeat what they did last week, falling to the Oakland Raiders in what was a gagger of a game? Don't get me wrong, I'm a Raider fan. You got to go Redskins this game. You've got to go. And if you disagree, feel free to call in 347-857-1959. You can join the online chat. Beware, it is shark-infested waters. Enter your own risk. You are listening to Vincent Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Harden Sr. If you want, you can drop me an email at vincentradio@gmail.com. Also, the show is on iTunes. You can listen to it whenever you want. Just go to iTunes and search Vincent Radio. You'll see the logo. Of course, you can become a fan of the show page on Facebook at Vincent Radio, hosted by Anthony Harden Sr., where you can become a fan of me. You can become my friend. Let's be friends, okay? Five fans, sports fans, let's be friends on Facebook. Talk a little shit. Get some press releases, kind of keep you guys up to date on what's going on. And lastly, rounding out the Sunday gaggle of games, the Oakland Raiders at the Arizona Cardinals. Now, there's talk that the Raiders will go back to Jason Campbell. I don't think they will. I think right now this is Bruce Gradkowski's time to shine. I just like what he has he's done everything you could ask of him to do in the situation. Coming off the bench, looking great while he's doing it. I mean, Derek Anderson struggled last week for the Arizona Cardinals. And there's talk now that rookie Max Hall is really getting close to becoming a starter for the Arizona Cardinals. And the craziest thing about this game is, at the end of the day, one of these teams are going to be 2-1. That's the scariest thing, is one of these teams are going to be 2-1. The Raiders are 3-0 all time on the road against the Cardinals. Arizona's wide receiver Steve Breston has 31 catches in his last 5 September outings. If you'd like to indulge me, which I'm sure you do, I'd kind of like to look at this game a little bit more. Hey, you know what? I'm a Raider fan. What can I say? And I'm not quite sure what to expect. And I've been saying this. I've been saying this, and I mean this in the most positive way. Is there seems to be a shelf life for Darren McFadden. And I'm not quite sure. I mean, he was nominated for the FedEx Ground Player of the Week, 30 rushes, 145 yards, and a 16-14 win over the Rams. Okay? But being a Raider fan, it just seems like you expect Darren McFadden to start out of the gate quickly, have 3 or 4 great games, and then he just goes Houdini and disappears for the rest of the season. And I'm just wondering what's going to happen? You know, I mean, let's be honest. The Cardinals' defense is by no means flaunted. So what type of game is Darren Ruff? Darren Ruff, that is the key. To me personally, he's the key to this game. You get 30 rushes, 145 yards out of Darren McFadden this weekend, you can almost guarantee a win for those Raiders. This will be their first time at University of Phoenix Stadium. The game's actually going to be on TV. Thank the Lord. Thank the Lord. And, you know, it's funny. Now, I want to bring this up. I want to, it seems like you have so many haters and detractors for the Oakland Raiders. You know, are they desperate? Are they doomed? I wouldn't say they're doomed. I think desperate teams right now, you look at the Niners, they do not want to start 0-2. If the Vikings lose this game, it could spell disaster. It could really spell disaster for the Minnesota Vikings and their fans if, for some reason, they lose to Detroit. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying if they do, though, it could spell disaster. And the Broncos, you know, I didn't want to touch on this, but I will bring this up. I think the Broncos will be playing for more than just the pride of the game. I think they'll play hard for Kenny McKinley, the teammate who committed suicide earlier this week. I don't like going there and bringing up the negative, but I think that the Broncos will show a little more heart. You know, will Joe Flacco have two crappy games in a row? You know, the Redskins looking pretty good. Texans looking pretty dominant. Chargers looks like they're back to being the Chargers. They forced 6 turnovers last week. They're actually going to sit Ryan Matthews. And the Bears, you know, a lot of people are talking about Julius Peppers, but I think one of the most underrated players is Clay Matthews. And I think it's interesting that he seems to have flown under the radar so much. And right now he is on the short list of NFL Defensive Players of the Year. Easily. So, I mean, that's kind of your wrap-up right there of the NFL season. I'm getting ready to wind up here. I want to thank you all very, very much for tuning in and listening to Vincent Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Harden Sr., broadcasting live September the 23rd, 2010. I will be back next Thursday, 10 o'clock. I got 2 interviews set up. I'm not going to jinx them. I'm just going to check the Facebook page, check the Twitter with Anthony Harden, and you will find out next week who the interviews are. But I'm done giving out names and having guys flake, but I'm not going to jinx them. But I've got some good stuff set up for next week. Next week we will break down UFC 119, talk a little Bellator, talk a little boxing. Recap the week that was in the NFL. Talk a little MLB baseball. I know some of you freaks are all excited because the NHL preseason is starting up. I said earlier, my sharks got just ran through last night. But again, I want to thank you all very, very much for listening. Tune in next week, 10 till 11:30. Kind of cut it short tonight. Got an early, early morning tomorrow. Again, thank you all for tuning in to Vincent Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Harden. I will be broadcasting live next week from 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Two big, big, big guests. I don't want to jinx them. Let you guys know what's up. Thank you to all the usual suspects for tuning in. I'll see you guys next week. And like I always tell you, I always in the show, keep your hands up and your chin down. I'm gone.